This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, has China exploited the coronavirus pandemic to intensify its continuing efforts to undermine democracy and export its brand of authoritarianism around the world? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. When late last year a novel coronavirus infected someone in Wuhan, China, which led to an outbreak that soon morphed into a global pandemic, Beijing repeatedly deceived and whitewashed the facts as the coronavirus spread. Press reports indicate that President Xi Jinping did not warn the public until January 20, 3 weeks after doctors sounded the alarm. One of them, Li Wenlong, a 34-year-old ophthalmologist, later died of the virus. To set the table for our discussion about to what extent China may be gaining a geopolitical upper hand in the wake of the pandemic, I present two quotes from our distinguished analysts who will be joining us in a minute. So first to David Shulman, in his recent article entitled How China is Exploiting the Pandemic to Export Authoritarianism, published in War on the Rocks, he writes, quote, the CCP, Chinese Communist Party, is employing a propaganda and disinformation blitz, not just to protect its reputation, but to go on the offensive. Chinese leaders appear set to translate their manipulation of the global narrative and provision of medical equipment to countries hit hard by COVID-19 to their concrete benefit, including through advantageous investment deals with the European Union. Deliveries of ventilators, masks, and virus kits may come packaged with pressure on countries that have been reluctant to adopt China's terms or integrate Huawei equipment in their 5G infrastructure, close quote. Now let me turn to Liselotte Ottgard. In her recent article entitled Double-Edged Aid, China's Strategy to Gain Influence Through Regional Assistance, quote, throughout most regions of the world, China's regional development strategy recalls Janus, ancient Roman god who was often portrayed with two faces. Like Janus, as China seeks to expand its global influence, its regional and aid policies are driven by dual motivations to help underassisted regions, but also to serve Beijing's political, economic, and environmental interests while undermining those of competing global powers, close quote. Well, joining us to discuss these critical issues are the two distinguished China analysts I just quoted. David Shulman is adjunct senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security and senior advisor at the International Republican Institute. And Liselotte Ottgard, she is senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, specializing in Chinese, European, and Indo-Pacific security. And both panelists join me via Skype as we continue to practice social distancing. David Shulman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Liselotte Ottgard, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
David Shulman, let me begin with you. Do you think had Beijing been more open and forthright about the origins of the pandemic in Wuhan, could the world have done more earlier on to prevent its spread? I know it's one of those historical if questions, but I'd like to get your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. You know, as you say, it's one where we can't possibly know the answer for certain, but there is no doubt that there was a delay that was undertaken because the Chinese Communist Party wanted to make sure that they were understanding what they were facing, and they didn't want the information to get out that might undermine their legitimacy at home. And there's a lot of aspects to this. It's not necessarily just that there's, for instance, a very top-down push to control information. This also happens for bureaucratic reasons and for control of information at middling levels that happens around all sorts of data inside China. I think we can say that it would have given other countries, it would have given the world some more time to prepare. That said, I don't think that seeing how the United States, seeing how some other countries took a very long time to respond, even once we had the information outside of China, I think it also should not be used to let many of the countries that did not respond, even once they had the information, off the hook. But one can certainly see that countries that did have the information and responded very efficiently, such as Taiwan and such as South Korea, were able to then use that information and to respond and to prepare their publics. And if they had had that information even earlier, then they would have been able to do so even more effectively.
Turning to you, Liselotte Ottgard, same question. Had Beijing been more open and forthright, could the world have done more earlier on to prevent the spread of the coronavirus?
I would agree with David that it's important to get this information as early as possible, and China did not behave well on that. So that delays everything else, developing a vaccine, for the WHO as well, which countries look at. China has been very good at using institutions traditionally to legitimize their behavior and to further their course. And I also think the corona crisis has showed China's skills initially of using WHO in a way that sort of presented a nice picture of China, which was unfounded. So in that sense, I think that some actors came on board China's way of going about the crisis that delayed the possibilities for everyone else to respond. And while, again, you can't necessarily blame the WHO for everything that happened here, initially countries were looking to the World Health Organization for advice. And their unwillingness to criticize China at that point, I think, is also a key problem in this whole process and how China and the Chinese Communist Party went about handling how to publicize or tell about this problem internationally.
Back to you, Dave Shulman. What are your primary concerns about China and the way it's bragging about its authoritarian one-party system as being somehow more efficient and effective in combating pandemics or even making economic progress? Never mind that, of course, it comes at the expense of democracy, individual liberty, freedom of speech.
That's a very good question. And I think that that goes to the point that, yes, we should be talking about what are the origins of this virus. I think it is important. And I think talking about the failings of China's authoritarian system in controlling information and what that meant for the world is an important lesson. But I think the bigger issue here is how is China's behavior in the wake of the outbreak a signal as to how it intends to dominate the global narrative and how it intends to use this to try to put China more centrally at the heart of the international system. And so I think you can point to a few different aspects using this medical aid of PPE and other things to try to increase China's influence in countries where it already has a certain level of influence. So perhaps pushing investment deals as they are offering this assistance, perhaps using it to push countries on certain elements around, say, 5G infrastructure. That's one aspect. I think the bigger issue is China able to use this to demonstrate that they are truly a responsible great power on the global stage that can respond to a crisis like this better than Western democracies can. So I think that's one. And then two, can they use this, as you mentioned, Carol, to demonstrate that authoritarian systems are better prepared to deal with this sort of crisis and then build upon arguably what they've been doing, especially in the developing world for years now, which is to sell the notion that the United States and the Democratic West are declining, China is rising, and it's rising because of the efficacy of its state-led Leninist political system.
Let me pose that same question to you, Liselotte Odegaard. Again, Beijing appears to be trying to persuade other countries, especially fledgling democracies, that its authoritarian one-party rule system is more effective in responding to the virus, you know, notwithstanding its deceptions and cover-ups in the beginning, compared to that of democracies like Europe and the United States. Do you see that taking place, and do you see signs that some countries in some region are buying that narrative?
Definitely, it's very worrying. And one problem about China is that they're extremely quick to plug into neglected needs to weaker countries. And this can be very developed nations who are, for example, EU member states, but feel that the EU doesn't contribute. And a good example here is, of course, Italy, who was very hard and early on hit by the COVID-19. And the EU just wasn't quick enough to send medical supplies and assistance to Italy. And then China was there immediately. The EU came later and they're now up to speed. But the point is, you have to be there instantly. This created a very bad impression in Rome and in Italy as a whole of neglect on the part of European Union at a time which is very difficult for Europe because the UK is leaving and they can't agree on the budget. So this kind of behavior, I think we need to be aware of that, and the Western world should be quicker to respond to crises, especially when they occur amongst allies and partners. Another problem is that the weak countries now really experience how dependent they are on China, because with the corona crisis also follows an economic crisis. So, for example, in Central Asia, they don't have many alternatives to Chinese economic investments, and a lot of them has huge debts to China. And now those debts, they're just not able to pay them off, so they have to ask China for debt relief. And China will demand political favors in return. So, for example, we have seen recently that China has redrawn the map of the border with Kazakhstan, implying that the border deal they have made may not be going on forever, or China may have a different opinion on it. So that kind of threats toward very weak states is a concern. And I think the West should be more aware of how to provide help to these countries so they have alternatives. So there are opportunities for us to address some of where China has managed to gain a strong foothold in Africa and Latin America, the same story as in Central Asia and many places.
David, I wanted to ask you also to answer a question that's very much related, and that is, Lislot was talking about the neglect by the EU vis-a-vis Italy and so forth, whereby China exploited that gap. But critics are saying that lack of U.S. leadership on the pandemic inadvertently contributed to China's narrative. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do agree with that. I think that is a vacuum that China was prepared to fill, in addition to the one that Lislot mentioned from what the European Union was doing or was not doing. And I think it speaks to a broader issue with the U.S. role in global governance generally and in international institutions. China really is trying to use a stepped up role in those institutions, whether it's in terms of leadership positions in U.N. specialized agencies, or whether it's just increasing its control over discourse and the types of language that's used, the definition of issues like human rights and things like that. These are debates that are really critical to the normative underpinnings of the liberal international order. And so the more that the United States and its democratic allies and partners pull back, the more that this really is a self-inflicted wound that gives China a gift. So I think it's important now in the context of what's happening around COVID, but I think it's also much more broadly an issue that allows China to paint itself as a global leader on issues not just on this, but such as climate change, globalization, or many other issues. And so that's really something that I think we need to work with our, especially our European allies, on changing and making sure that democracy and those values that underpin the current order remain shored up in the face of a pretty strong attempt now by the Chinese Communist Party to undermine them. The other point I wanted to make based on Lislot's excellent comments was, I think specifically in the aftermath of this pandemic, the impact is going to be really long term for so many of these countries that already were facing massive challenges economically, socially. And now with the impact of COVID, you're going to have a lot of leaders struggling to answer massive challenges, not just around health, but around the impact on their economies and other broader issues. And China is going to be there ready to offer them supposed quick fix authoritarian solutions to a lot of those problems, right? And so this is not just around how to address economic growth, how to address corruption. It's around information control and things like that. These are leaders that maybe they're nominally small-D Democrats, but they are not exactly looking forward to the prospect of facing these challenges and having people out on the streets demanding quicker responses. So they will be tempted potentially, as we've already seen in a lot of countries, to go in more of an authoritarian direction. And China will be primed to provide the training and the technology to allow them to be able to do that. So we, the United States and our allies and partners, need to be ready to offer democratic solutions, need to be ready to offer aid of all sorts to help these countries provide citizen-centered solutions that don't trend in a more liberal direction.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Dave Schulman, from whom you just heard. He's senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security and senior advisor at the International Republican Institute, both based here in Washington. And Lislot Ødegaard, she's senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, a think tank here in Washington. We're discussing the ramifications of China's influence on the world stage as it exploits the coronavirus pandemic to further its authoritarian ends. Well, here's a big shout out to all our loyal listeners in East Asia, from China to Hong Kong to Vietnam and all countries in between. Please, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please leave a comment on our Facebook page at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, back to our discussion, and to you, Lislot Ødegaard from Hudson Institute, picking up on what David Shulman was just saying about the impact on economies, the devastation that the coronavirus pandemic is having due to the social distancing and shutting down of businesses. That leads me to ask you, what about the many investments, for example, that you alluded to earlier that China has in Africa, not just in infrastructure, but even you can see that on the streets in even a tiny country like Cabo Verde, right off the coast of West Africa. You know, they're taking over petty commerce, previously the province of local businesses. How worried are you about China's growing attempts to, in a sense, blackmail some developing countries, whether in Latin America or Africa or Central Asia? And how much harder will this be for the United States to combat this trend economically and in other ways?
It's extremely worrying. And I want to add that it doesn't just happen to poor, neglected countries. It also happens within very rich countries with a periphery that perceives itself as neglected. So, for example, Faroe Islands, which is part of the Kingdom of Denmark, which is very rich, have recently been subjected to pressure from China to use Huawei for their 5G network if they wanted to keep a favorable trade deal with China. And some of these countries are very dependent on selling fish to China. The price is going down, so they will also be even more dependent. So I think this is a global problem, not just for developing countries, but also for countries like, for example, Italy, that feels neglected and not taken seriously with their economic problems by their region. And I think it's very worrying because China also buys into our supply chains with their investments. So if we move over again to the developed part of the world, they have bought up a lot of sophisticated, for example, companies making engines for shipbuilding in Europe, and they can then transfer the technology to China and eventually build their own commercial and navy ships and sell them to other countries. So I think this sort of investments and takeover of companies, because some countries lack investments from the West, is a big problem. And also the whole supply chain issue and technology transfer issue. And the way China does it, through forced joint ventures, stealing designs, is undermining the liberal market economy in ways that we haven't really seen before. And so I don't think it's just the developing countries that are a problem here. And the coronavirus has showed that it's also fairly rich nations that feel neglected. A third problem, I think, is that discrepancy between elites and the population in some fragile states. So, for example, a lot of Central Asian people are not very pro-Chinese, but the elites want to sustain power, and they see China's authoritarian ways, their means of surveilling populations, etc., and they're also corrupt. So China can help them stay in power by supporting all these unhealthy, coercive practices towards their own populations in these countries. And again, this also is happening in Africa and other places where you have authoritarian government.
So obviously, David, we have very few minutes left, but pick up on any of the points that Lieslotte brought up, whether it was exploiting the division between elites and the ordinary citizen, and obviously China exporting its surveillance technology, which only bolsters authoritarian regimes, undermines fledgling democracies, whether in Africa or elsewhere. It undermines democracies and our attempts to promote freedom and free speech and assembly. So please go forward with your thoughts.
You know, without going over what Lieslotte just said, I think the point that China is really successfully co-opting elites in a lot of these countries, both through corruption, through investments that are even licit, but which certainly benefit a lot of elites in these countries, where they're able to cultivate friends, quote unquote, in many of these countries. That kind of long-term effort and that cultivation of elites means that it's incredibly important for the United States and its partners in the West to work from the bottom up in a lot of these countries and really mobilizing civil society and journalists and others who are already predisposed to want to protect their democracies or to push back on illiberal trends in their countries. And so supporting them and their ability to check not only what China's doing in a country, but to keep their own officials honest, right? Because in a lot of these countries, it's a two-way street, and there's a lot of these sorts of elites that we're both talking about who are benefiting from engagement with China. And so there needs to be a watchdog function in a lot of these countries, and we can support that. We've talked a lot about the real threats of what China's doing specifically around this pandemic. I think it's important to note that it's not all sunshine for the Chinese Communist Party coming out of this. I think especially in the last couple of weeks, it's been clear that their efforts to turn this into a propaganda, soft power, global leadership victory are falling flat in many places, not only because there's more conversation about the origins of the virus, but even in terms of that assistance, right? There's been a lot of discussion around the faulty equipment that China's been donating to countries. There's been a lot of discussion increasingly about the fact that the way in which China went about containing the virus inside its own borders was actually rife with human rights abuses and also not as effective as the way in which, as I mentioned earlier, countries like Taiwan and South Korea went about doing it, democracies who used technology for good to ensure that their countries were prepared and could really rapidly and effectively handle this problem. And then you have Taiwan itself getting out there and, much to the chagrin of the Chinese Communist Party leadership, saying Taiwan can help. We can offer assistance to the world and show how to deal with this pandemic. And then lastly, I think the very aggressive propaganda and the disinformation effort that is at an entire other level than we've ever seen out of China, aside from what they've done in Taiwan and Hong Kong. Many of the things that China's done in the disinformation space look very similar to the kinds of things that Russia has done. So it's not all a positive story for China coming out of this. And I think that they're going to only more aggressively try to shape the narrative. But it's not that they're coming out of this having attained a clear victory.
Well, those are all excellent points, David. And so I'm going to give the last word to Lieselot Odgaard. Are we at a geopolitical turning point away from American global primacy? Certainly there are critiques that the United States should be more out front. Some analysts are saying that China doesn't necessarily want to supplant America, but it is doing its best to create chaos and make it difficult for the United States and other democracies. So how do you see it at the end of the day, where we stand?
Although there are serious problems and China is making a lot of headway in promoting authoritarian regimes, I am optimistic that we can push back at that. I think, like David said, coronavirus crisis has also showed severe weaknesses about China's behavior in the world. And like he said, Taiwan and South Korea, for once, the Asian democracies have been able to demonstrate in the public that they can do better than China. And this kind of public diplomacy effort, which it is, I think we're not good enough at that in the West. So, for example, Japan invests a lot more in infrastructure in Asia than China does, but they don't get the publicity and the credit for it that they should. And we're not good enough at using it to promote our own sort of values and principles, such as freedom of navigation, the free market competition, etc. So I think tying in our values with a more conscious effort to coordinate our policies so that they don't just strengthen our economic well-being, but strengthen market economic and political principles across the world is very important in the developing world, for example. I think key, though, would be better coordination between allies and partners.
I think the West could do a better job at public diplomacy and touting its many investments and contributions to many parts of the world. But I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this China edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, David Shulman, Senior Advisor at the International Republican Institute, and Lieselot Odgaard, Senior Fellow at the Hudson Institute. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.